Hey everyone, welcome to Share Your Sparkle. My name is Dr. Darlene Berrios, and today we're going to take a walk through the cosmos. One of the things I miss about being in the classroom is reading to people. And so I'm going to do some readings today related to the cosmos and the time of year it is. Here we go. I'm going to start with Neil deGrasse Tyson. I mentioned him before, the scientist. He is the host of The Cosmos, the series on Disney Plus, and he's also the author of Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. So when this is released, it's going to be Tuesday, December 22nd. And if I had planned accordingly, I probably should have produced and released this earlier, but I was too busy blabbering my last episode. But I'm talking about historically what people have thought about different events and times, and today, what's happening in the world with the cosmos. So Neil deGrasse Tyson, I love the way he starts his book, because it literally, this is the first sentence, not the quote that he uses, but, and I want you to try to understand this, because I don't understand this. In the beginning, nearly 14 billion years ago, all the space and all the matter and all the energy of the known universe was contained in a volume less than 1/1,000,000,000th the size of the period that ends this sentence. That blows my mind. I'm gonna read that one more time. In the beginning, nearly 14 billion years ago, all the space and all the matter and all the energy of the known universe was contained in a volume less than 1/1,000,000,000,000th the size of the period that ends this sentence. I don't even understand how people have calculated that. I don't even understand that. Never mind what that really means. Oh, I don't know. I love astronomy, and that blows my mind. I like how things make my brain feel. For some people, that really freaks them out. But it's just fascinating that that's what science has told us so far, and there's still so much more to learn, right? It's historically, you know, people have literally been killed for their scientific beliefs. So I'm going to start actually with a man who, let me read a little bit about him. I don't know if you've ever heard of him before. And I'm reading this from Britannica. Giordano Bruno. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. Original name, Filippo Bruno. Born 1548 near Naples, and died on February 17th, 1600 in Rome. So he was an Italian philosopher, astronomer, mathematician, and occultist whose theories anticipated modern science. So he had these ideas. Most notably of these were his theories of the infinite universe. Okay, so kind of like what we think now, and the multiplicity of worlds, in which he rejected the traditional, so at the time, geocentric or earth-centered astronomy, and intuitively went beyond the Copernican heliocentric or sun-centered theory. So his ideas were against these traditional ideas that they had at the time, with his infinite universe idea and his idea of like a multiplicity of worlds. And it says here, Bruno, perhaps chiefly remembered for the tragic death he suffered at the stake because of his tenacity with which he maintained these unorthodox ideas at the time when both the Roman Catholic Church and Reformed churches were reaffirming rigid Aristotelian and scholastic principles in their struggle for the evangelicization of Europe. So here he is saying the universe is infinite. There are all these worlds. We're in the time when it was like, no, the earth is the center of the universe. And the sun, you know, is the main thing out there. And here's this man who was like, no, that's not happening, people. That's not what's going on. And you know what happened? Well, he traveled to Europe. He wrote all these different books and eventually ended up back in Italy. Darn. Probably not the best thing for him. Because what happened was, he was jailed by the Roman Inquisition in 1593. Bruno entered the jail of the Roman palace of the Santi Officio, or the Holy Office. Holy trouble for him, right? And during the seven-year Roman period of the trial, Bruno at first developed his previous defense line, disclaiming any particular interest in theological matters and reaffirming the philosophical character of his speculation. This distinction did not satisfy the inquisitors, who demanded an unconditional retraction of his theories. They're like, no, you say you don't believe this. Tell us you don't believe this. Tell us your theories are wrong. Here's my interpretation of what's happening, right? Then here in Britannica, Bruno then made a desperate attempt to demonstrate that his views were not incompatible with the Christian conception of God and creation. So he's like, no, people, listen. They're not at odds. Here we go. Like, what I'm saying and what you're thinking, there's, you know, it's not one end of the spectrum. They're the same. Inquisitors, here we go, rejected his arguments and pressed him for a formal retraction. Bruno finally declared that he had nothing to retract and that he did not even know what he was expected to retract. He's like, you know what? All you people, forget about you. This is my, you know, I'm giving you my 2 cents. And then Britannica comes in here. At that point, Pope Clement VIII ordered that he be sentenced as a heretic. So on February 8th, 1600, when the death sentence was formally read to him. Oh man, he went out like a champ. He addressed his judges saying, quote, perhaps your fear in passing judgment on me is greater than mine in receiving it, end quote. And then people, he was taken to Campo de Fiori and he was gagged and burned alive. Damn! That's intense, right? But now we have these ideas in books and are more along the line of what he was basically proclaiming in the late 1500s. So Bruno, I'm going to name my next dog Bruno, by the way. Not after him, but I like the idea of this feisty man, you know, like sticking to his beliefs. So yesterday, people, was the winter solstice, December 21st, 2020. December 21st, 2020. I am recording on Sunday, and I hope to get out, and I'll explain a little bit, to see the Christmas star. There's a conjunction of some planets happening. Before I go into that, the winter solstice has been, for some people, the beginning of a new year. So if that's the case, Happy New Year. And I know historically December 21st has been a memorable time in different ways. And I'm going to go to history.com and talk about different ways around the world that the winter solstice is celebrated or recognized. So for those of you who don't know, the winter solstice is the shortest day and the longest night of the year. So history.com here. And in the northern hemisphere, I don't know where you are, but that's where I am, it takes place between December 20th and December 23rd. So the reverse is true in the southern hemisphere, where the shortest day of the year occurs in June. And cultures around the world have long held feasts and celebrated holidays around the winter solstice. Fire and light are traditional symbols of celebrations held on the darkest day of the year. So on Tuesday, people, when this is released, we're on our way back from the darkness. You know, every day will be gaining daylight. The winter solstice is the day of the year with the fewest hours of daylight, and it marks the start of astronomical winter. After the winter solstice, days start becoming longer and nights shorter as spring approaches. Humans have observed the winter solstice as early as Neolithic period, the last part of the Stone Age, beginning about 10,200 BC. Like, even that, honestly, is hard to comprehend as a human being. Never mind 4 billion years ago. Anyway, so Neolithic monuments such as Newgrange in Ireland are aligned with sunrise on the winter solstice. Some archaeologists have theorized that these tomb-like structures served a religious purpose in which Stone Age people held rituals to capture the sun on the shortest day. Stonehenge, which is oriented toward the winter solstice sunset, may also have been a place of December rituals for Stone Age people. And doesn't that blow you away? So I'm not reading from history.com right now, that these structures, first of all, people are still trying to figure out how some of them were made, because these massive pieces of stone are believed to have been moved from miles away when, quote unquote, the technology at the time was very different than what we have today. And one, the way these structures capture, you know, different and align with, in this case, you know, the winter solstice or different happenings, celestial happenings throughout the year, is amazing. As well as they're still around. Like, people, these structures are still around thousands of years later. And today we can't build houses that last that long or cars that last that long. What is wrong with us? Like, what is wrong with us? All right. So going back to history.com, ancient solstice celebration. So around the world, this has been celebrated and is celebrated in different ways. Roman holiday. So ancient Romans held several celebrations around the time of the winter solstice. One is Saturnalia, a holiday in honor of Saturn, the god of agriculture, was a week-long celebration in the days leading up to the winter solstice. Saturnalia was a hedonistic time when food and drink were plentiful and the normal Roman social order was turned upside down. For a week, slaves would become masters, peasants were in command of the city, and business and schools were closed so that everyone could join in the fun. Also around the time of the winter solstice, Romans observed Juvenalia, a feast honoring the children of Rome. And in addition, members of the upper classes often celebrated the birthday of Mirtha. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. On December 25th. And that was the Persian god of light. And it was believed that Mirtha, an infant god, was born of rock. And for some Romans, Mirtha's birthday was the most sacred of the year. In the later Roman Empire, Mirtha blended with Sol Invictus, god of the unconquered sun. And some theorists believe the early Roman Catholic Church may have chosen the same date for Christmas in order to supplant pagan rituals, though many Christian scholars dispute this. How interesting, right? So there are already, before Christmas, different celebrations happening on December 25th. And yeah, what do you think about that one? All right. Because if you actually look up the birth of Jesus, from my research, it doesn't seem like there is an exact date, and it might not even have happened around or in December. But I invite you to do a little bit of research around that. There's also Yule, which is the ancient Norseman of Scandinavia, who celebrated Yule from the winter solstice through January. And this is in recognition of the return of the sun. Fathers and sons would bring home large logs, which became known as Yule logs. And they would set one end of those logs on fire, and the people would feast until the log burned out, which could take as long as 12 days. The Norse believed that each spark from the fire represented a new piglet or calf that would be born during the coming year. So, moving on, the Inca Empire paid homage to the sun god Intu at a winter solstice celebration called Intu Rami. In Peru, like the rest of the southern hemisphere, the winter solstice takes place in June, and the Incas fasted for 3 days before the solstice. Before dawn, on the day of the solstice, they went to a ceremonial plaza and waited for the sunrise. When it appeared, they crouched down before it, offering golden cups of chichi, a sacred beer made from fermented corn. And animals, including llamas, were sacrificed during the ceremony, and the Incas used a mirror to focus the sun rays and kindle a fire. After the Spanish conquest of the Inca Empire in the 1500s, the Spaniards banned the Inti Rami holiday. It was revived in the 20th century with mock sacrifices and continues today. Now, there are other winter solstice traditions, and in Scandinavia, there's St. Lucia's Day in honor of the saint. As a symbol of light, Lucia and her feast day blended naturally with solstice traditions, such as lighting fires to scare away spirits during the longest and darkest night of the year. I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, but because my tones, I just, Donchi, Dongzhi, the Chinese celebration of the winter solstice, welcomes the return of longer days and the corresponding increase in positive energy in the year to come. The celebration may have begun as a harvest festival when farmers and fishermen took off to celebrate with their families. Today it remains an occasion for families to join together to celebrate the year that has passed and share good wishes for the year to come. The most traditional food for this celebration in southern China is the glutinous rice balls known as tang yuan, often brightly colored and cooked in sweet and savory broth. And in Northern Chinese enjoy plain or meat-stuffed dumplings, a particularly warming and nourishing food for a midwinter celebration. So around the world, different happenings during the winter solstice for different reasons. North American tradition, so for the Zuni, one of the Native American Pueblo peoples in western New Mexico, the winter solstice signifies the beginning of the year. It's marked with a ceremonial dance called Shalako. After fasting, prayer, and observing the rising and setting of the sun for several days before the solstice, the Pequin, or the sun priest, traditionally announces the exact moment of Itiwana, the rebirth of the sun, with a long, mournful call. With that signal, the rejoicing and dancing begin, as 12 Kachini clowns in elaborate masks dance along the Shalako themselves, a 12-foot-high effigies with bird heads seen as messengers from the gods. After 4 days of dancing, new dancers are chosen for the following year, and the yearly cycle begins again. Like the Zuni, the Hopi in northern Arizona celebrate the winter solstice with a similar ritual. In the Hopi solstice celebration of Soljol, the sun chief takes on the duties of the Zuni Pekwin, announcing the setting of the sun on the solstice. All night ceremony then begins, including kindling fires, dancing, and sometimes gift giving. Traditionally, the Hopi sun watcher was not only important to the winter solstice tradition, as his observation of the sun also governed the planting of crops and the observance of Hopi ceremonies and rituals all year long. So history.com, thank you for letting us know about the different traditions and rituals of the winter solstice that just passed. Now, one of the things happening in the sky is, now I'm going to USA Today, there's still time to catch this alignment, but the title here is World Aligns This Winter Solstice. Jupiter and Saturn will look like a double planet on Monday. I believe in New England it's going to be cloudy the next 2 days, but in the middle of the week it should clear up, and I'm hoping to catch this. But let me share with you what the USA Today has written about this year's winter solstice. This year's winter solstice will bring a rare sight to our night skies, just in time for the holidays. For Earth viewers, Jupiter and Saturn will appear closer to each other on December 21st than they have been since the Middle Ages. If you gaze into the southwestern horizon at the time, the two gas giants will look like neighboring points of light. They will appear to be almost a double planet, said Rice University astronomer Patrick Hadigan. Alignments between these two planets are rather rare, occurring once every 20 years or so, but this conjunction is especially rare because of how close the planets will appear to one another, Hadigan said. You'd have to go all the way back to just before dawn on March 4th, 1226, to see a closer alignment between these objects visible in the night sky. Astronomers call what we'll witness on December 21st a conjunction. From asteroids or moons to planets and stars, a conjunction is when two objects in space appear to be close to each other as observed from Earth. In the reality of space, there's still hundreds of millions of miles apart. Every 20 years, our solar system's largest planets align during their orbits around the sun. Jupiter and Saturn's last conjunction was in 2000. But this year is particularly special because the two will appear to be separated by just 1/5 the diameter of a full moon, or 1/10 degrees, an occurrence the world hasn't seen since the Middle Ages. The last time Jupiter and Saturn came this close was 1623, but that conjunction was too near the sun to be seen by Earthlings. Oh wow, just 23 years after Bruno was murdered, basically. That's my own interjection there. USA Today did not put that in there. Now I'm back to USA Today. So 1226 is actually the most recent time such a close conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn was visible to humans. That's just sly of 800 years ago, said Amy Oliver, spokeswoman for the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. She would probably be so fun to interview. That's my own comment. call, in parentheses, 2020's conjunction a unique holiday gift to the world, she said. Maybe it's the soothing band-aid for 2020. So how to watch the 2020 conjunction on December 21st. I know it's December 22nd, or actually I don't know when you're going to be listening to this, but you might still have time. Saturn and Jupiter are already visible in December's sky. The two planets have been moving closer to each other for much of 2020. They look like two points of light in the sky. Saturn, which is farther from Earth, will be the fainter one. Hadigan and Oliver encourage stargazers around the world to start looking now. Over the next couple of weeks, you can watch them move, which is super cool because you're actually seeing planets in orbit, Hadigan told USA Today, adding that identifying them now will also make the conjunction on winter solstice easier to identify. And to witness the conjunction on December 21st, weather permitting, it will be observable anywhere on Earth, although it will be more difficult in high northern latitudes. People are going to have to work a bit, Hadigan said. He added that the two planets are not going to suddenly look like a brilliant, quote-unquote, Christmas star. You won't need a telescope, but you'll have to find a good viewing spot and be on time. Avoid tall buildings or mountains and look toward the low southwestern horizon right after sunset. If you're too early, you might miss a fainter Saturn. If you're too late, the two may have already slipped into the horizon for the night. The best viewing conditions will be near the equator. Can't make it down to the equator. There will be less time to catch a glimpse farther north. Oliver said the best time for viewing is between dusk and 15 to 20 minutes after dark. She added that the maximum conjunction will occur at 1:20 Eastern Standard Time on December 21st, and it won't be visible to the naked eye during daylight. Still, Americans across the U.S. will be able to see the conjunction in the early night of December 21st, weather permitting. That doesn't make it any less special, Oliver said. The pairing will be still so close together that by far beats other past events. If a snowy night or tight schedule makes you miss winter solstice sky event, never fear. Although the maximum conjunction is on December 21st, Jupiter and Saturn will still appear to be closer than the diameter of a full moon from December 16th to December 25th. So if you're listening, you still have a few more days. Such a close conjunction won't happen again until early March 15, 2080. I would be 105 years old if I were still alive. Some of you might actually still be alive on March 15th, 2080. If you are, you better remember me, because you listened to this podcast and that's how you learned about this conjunction. So March 15th, 2080. Put it on your calendars. Say, remember Darlene Berrios. Although this might be the only time most adults witness the rare event, Hadigan adds that it's a special opportunity for family. Parents can show the conjunction to their kids, he said, and then tell them 60 years from now, when I'm long gone, you go out in the morning sky and look at this conjunction and you think of me. Man, this guy has the same thought as I had. Hadigan says, looking up to the sky enriches people's lives. Quote, astronomy gives you a different kind of perspective on the universe, which is different from our day-to-day experiences. He said, things are going on above us all the time. They mark eras. It's important. It's an important connection between generations. So, everyone, I hope you get a chance to see the conjunction. If not, I hope learning and hearing about it just adds a little bit more light to your life. And thinking about perspective, I think as humans we have this tiny lens, and there's so much happening, and that has happened in the history of time and universe and what we know to be time and universe. So for what little time we're here, let's enjoy it. Be you. Let it seep into everything that you do. I'm going to end on one last text. It's the Tosha Silver Book, Change Me Prayers. And it's a section called The Spark You Are. Never forget, you are eternity itself, pretending at times to be a worried, fearful, or sometimes cranky human. You are a spark of unlimited divinity. You are expansive light encased in form. So whenever someone says, "What do you expect? I'm only human," I often laugh and think, "You are." And at the bottom it says, "Change me, O divine beloved, into one who always remembers my true identity, unlimited light and love. Let me know myself as pure consciousness. Wake me from the sleepwalk of believing I am only human. I am yours. You are mine. We are one." All right, people, accept your sparkle, surrender to it, and allow it to be so. Until then, keep shining!